This is the Telegraph Cycling Podcast, supported by Jaguar. Today we are in Neltje Jans.
Hello, my name is Richard Moore. I'm with Lionel Burney.
Hello, Richard.
And Daniel Free.
Hello.
We're very windswept today, chaps. Where are we, Lionel?
We're sort of on a very narrow strip of land between the North Sea and the Netherlands.
It's an artificial island, this, isn't it?
Apparently so, yeah. Built to as part of the sea defences in this area. Obviously, over the centuries, has been hugely prone to flooding. I was given an information pack about how this area of the Netherlands is defending itself against the sea constantly. I haven't really read much through that because we've had such an entertaining stage today.
Yeah, Hugo Kurowitz from Het Nieuwsblad said as the rain lashed down earlier, said they try and claim the sea, huh? They can't claim the sea. Don't know really what that meant, but I think I got the idea. It was very wet.
That's the same accent you use when you're impersonating your wife.
Identical.
And she's not Belgian.
No, she certainly doesn't look like Hugo. Lionel, you're going to give us a little news roundup today, are you?
Yep, stage two of the Tour de France, won by André Greipel. His seventh Tour de France stage win, big German sprinter, came round Mark Cavendish and kept his run of stage wins going. He's won a stage every year since 2011. And Fabian Cancellara, perhaps the slight surprise, taking the yellow jersey by just a few seconds from, well, really taking it from the back of Tony Martin, who would have taken over the yellow jersey had his teammate Mark Cavendish finished third instead of fourth. But Cancellara nipped past and got the last time bonus, so he is in yellow for the sixth time in his career. And the news everyone's been waiting for, and I'm sure they'll follow this all the way through to Paris, the big four general classification. Bit of a shake-up there. Chris Froome is now leading Alberto Contador by 12 seconds. Vincenzo Nibali probably had the worst day because he's now 1:21 behind Froome, and Nairo Quintana at 1:37. So that's how the race for the yellow jersey stands at the moment.
Well, it was a dramatic day. We'll be hearing little interviews with Brian Holm, who's Mark Cavendish's team director, a very frank and in places funny interview with Brian Holm. We'll be hearing from Alex Dowsett, who's Nairo Quintana's teammate, and Geraint Thomas, who is Chris Froome's teammate and played in important role today. Daniel, you and I were at the Quickstep Ethics Quickstep bus after the stage and spoke a little bit to Cavendish's agent Simon Bailiff, and his wife Pita was there with baby Delilah. Baby Delilah was paddling in the water that was being emitted from the bus from the riders' showers, which they didn't seem that bothered about.
We should specify that Pita is Mark Cavendish's wife, not Simon's wife. Simon's wife was also there. Sarah, she was there.
They were all there. We were all there.
Glad we clarified that. But they were, because Cavendish came out and it was. They messed up. They had six riders, Ethics Quickstep, in a 26-man leading group. It was textbook stuff from them. You know, they certainly helped cause the splits. It was a bit like 2 years ago in the Tour de France. The two teams on the front in the crosswinds, Tinkoff, Saxo, Quickstep. You know, they know what they're doing. They had six strong riders there. They had the possibility of a stage win for Mark Cavendish and the yellow jersey for Tony Martin. It was all looking fantastic for them, and they messed it up. And Cavendish appeared afterwards very graciously congratulating André Greipel and didn't seem too bothered, but we think that privately he was quite angry.
Yeah, you said it was textbook riding. It was a textbook cock-up as well from Ethics Quickstep. There have been a few this year, and there is a common denominator, there is a common factor. I won't say who it is, but it's someone in the team car, not Brian Holm.
Or Rolf Aldag.
Yeah, unfortunate, really. I suppose a bit of a miscommunication as far as Tony Martin was concerned, because Cavendish sort of stopped his sprint, which is the natural thing to do, I guess, when you've been sprinting for 300.
I don't know if you've been following his social media output, but he's... are you one of the imbeciles who claims that he's sat up?
No, but I certainly did. People did make that point. If he had finished third, he would have prevented Fabian Cancellara from getting the yellow jersey. Tony Martin would have got it. So that's obviously very regrettable from Ethics Quickstep's point of view. But the real problem for Cavendish was Mark Renshaw's lead out, wasn't it? Renshaw pulled off way too early. Early in any circumstances, certainly early with the wind as it was. It was sort of a cross headwind, I think, wasn't it? So he really should have been looking to pull off if he could hold his speed for that long with about 150, 200 metres to go. Cavendish's acceleration was pretty decent. He was pretty happy with the way he executed the sprint, but was not very happy with his old mucker, Mark Renshaw, was he? I don't think there was a frank exchange, or perhaps not an exchange, more of a unilateral tirade as he made it onto the bus. But I'm sure they'll patch it up this evening. They've had the odd argument before.
I mean, Renshaw's delivered Cavendish to probably most of his 25 Tour de France stage wins. There's a great understanding usually between them, or certainly there was when they were at HCC High Road. They haven't quite clicked in the same way, have they, at Etics Quickstep? The chemistry doesn't seem quite the same. But what was so odd about it was that you would expect a long lead out in, I don't know if it was a tailwind or if it was a big bunch sprint. Here there was no danger at all. You know, he wasn't going to be swamped. There were really only two riders to worry about, Greipel and Sagan. So it was, as you say, a right royal cock-up.
Yeah, I suppose it was. But then again, it had been a very hard, aggressive and difficult day. I said to Alex Dowsett they had four seasons in one day with bright hot sunshine this morning and then the wind and then torrential rain, and that reduced visibility, and there was a lot of confusion out on the road when the groups were breaking up and riders didn't know where their teammates were. So it was a stressful old day, short and punchy stage. So, you know, cut them a bit of slack at the finish, I suppose. You know, although they did have the numbers, they definitely didn't execute it very well. And you have to feel really for Tony Martin, because he was... Well, he looked absolutely devastated afterwards and would have had the yellow jersey.
Tony Martin on a short, punchy 2 kilometre climb like the Mur de Huy tomorrow, can he take 3 seconds off Fabian Cancellara, and is he under threat from riders further down? We've got Tom Dumoulin, who's 6 seconds behind Cancellara, so 3 adrift of Martin. That'll be an interesting three-way tussle. I don't envisage Peter Sagan at 33 seconds down.
Could Rigoberta Urán be in yellow tomorrow?
Well, I think Sagan or Urán would need a stage victory and the bonus seconds that would come with a stage victory to really have any chance of taking.
Kwiatkowski is 19th. He's bit far adrift, perhaps. There's a lot of good riders. Stibar, Galopin, can he get up a climb like that?
I would doubt that he could take a minute off Cancellara.
True, that's a good point.
Napalm mentioned what a stressful day it had been as a sort of mitigating factor for what went wrong with Etics Quickstep. I think in the past, Cavendish has had problems with first stages, hasn't he? He kind of resolved this problem for a while. But, I mean, of course, today the mistake wasn't really his, but I'm sure the same kind of anxiety, this same just desire to get the race going and get on the score sheet probably infected Renshaw a little bit today. That might explain why he was a bit quick to pull the trigger. There's also a lot going on at that team behind the scenes at the moment. Etics Quickstep, we've talked many times about Cavendish's contract. I think Simon Bailey, if we mentioned earlier, Cavendish's manager, there was a few anguished glances being cast in the direction of Patrick Lefebvre, the Etics Quickstep manager, at the finish from Simon. And a lot of uncertainty about Renshaw's future as well. It will no doubt be tied to Cavendish's. Well, you would think so, unless their argument...
Maybe, exactly.
We did promise some news on the Cavendish contract situation, didn't we? But it's still a little bit too early.
So keep listening, folks. That's the message. Well, listen, shall we hear from Brian Holm, the sports director at Etics Quickstep? I spoke to him just after the finish. He was very frank, very critical of the team, and I assure you that the line he came up with at the end was, I think, a joke. Well, that was textbook Etics Quickstep sort of day, textbook tactics. You've got lots of men in that front group. But what happened in the sprint? Have you had a chance to have a look at it?
Yeah, probably a bit of the same like what happened at News Plus. The history continue.
A mistake by the team, or?
I can't see. I mean, it's not very often out of 25 riders can't make top 3. I mean, I don't know, the sprint went too long for him for some reason. I can't figure out yet. I have to talk to them. I mean, the whole Lotto team was sitting there not doing much. I mean, we tried to split it, of course, for the yellow jersey and then for CAF. I mean, first we would go for CAF, and if we knew kind Rohan Dennis wasn't that good, so like, I mean, we really blew it the last 500 meter. Like, we were such a good team, it was fantastic, controlled it like the plan, you know, like we knew actually everything when after the book. I mean, the car, you're always optimistic. I just thought it couldn't go wrong like that, and it did.
were you giving instructions on the road, or was it just a case of letting them get on with it? They're all experienced riders. They know what to do. They know how to win races, don't they?
I give instructions about the finish. We asked Tony to sit on Cancellara in the sprint, not to lose 1 second. He has to look after. And the lead out, I mean, with 25 riders, it's not really rocket science, except for today. I don't know why they started so early. You see Greipel, we sort of like, what happened now? And you saw Greipel easy in the wheel of cab, and like, dum 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 dum, boom, boom, and cab was number four.
Is there it sounds daft to say, but is there a confidence issue with Mark? Do you think that he went so early, or what was it?
I can't tell. I have not a clue. I just don't have a clue. It was like just meltdown. It went through. There was no reason to win so early. I mean, it's just so 25 riders in the first group, but there was no panic. You know, we could have done it easier, but like.
And there was nobody going to come from behind, was there? He could have waited till about 150, couldn't he?
He could run to 150 like Greipels did, and I was just like winning. But I mean, Greipels is a good cyclist. I mean, but we did our best to fog it also. And we did.
Well, Brian, I'll leave you to pick up your troops for tomorrow, another day tomorrow.
Oh, maybe I hang myself in the night. So if I don't see you again, it was a pleasure.
And now, le pédaleur de charme, supported by British Eurosport.
Yes, it's time once again for the British Eurosport pédaleur de charme. Our inaugural winner, Daniel Tekle-Heimanot, was presented with his pédaleur de charme t-shirt. Today we tweeted a picture of that. He seemed delighted, absolutely delighted. He was beaming as he held up his medium-sized t-shirt, and I'm sure he'll be wearing that in bed or something, maybe as an undershirt some stages, who knows, but it's cotton, so perhaps not. But we'll be presenting a Pédaleur de Charme t-shirt every day to the most deserving rider. Please tweet your nominations, hashtag Pédaleur. There were quite a lot of nominations today. Some obvious ones, some not so obvious. Peter Sagan was certainly in with a shout after puncturing from that lead group and single-handedly getting back on. Ian Stannard was a popular choice.
I thought Filippo Pozzato, friend of the podcast, deserved a vote for a patriotic tour of duty that he did at the front of the peloton. It looked suspiciously to me like a pull for Vincenzo Nibali,
well,
his compatriot on the Astana team.
I have a feeling Pozzato might get this award one day, but perhaps not today. Today's winner, and a couple of you nominated, Jan Bartha, who was in the breakaway and was apparently pedalling very charmingly. So tomorrow morning one of us will be dispatched to the Bora team bus, and we will present a Pédaleur de Charme t-shirt to Jan Bartha and hopefully get a picture of the occasion. Now, lots else happened today, of course. Of the big four you mentioned earlier, Lionel, there were sort of two winners, I guess, two losers, Chris Froome and Alberto Contador, although Froome was in a little split at the end and got seventh on stage and claimed another 4 seconds on Contador, which is not to be sniffed at. So he's moved right up to 10th overall now. And we spoke yesterday about the problems of the teams not having cars high up in the pecking order. And Sky are right up there now. They've rectified that situation with Geraint, thanks to Geraint Thomas, who's up to 5th overall. So they're well placed. They were very happy with today's stage, and we'll hear in a moment or two from Geraint Thomas. But what were your thoughts on what happened with the overall guys today? I mean, obviously Quintana and Nibali losing out.
Well, yeah, I mean, they were very happy at the Tinkoff Saxo bus. Spoke briefly to Sean Yates. Our conversation was interrupted because his phone rang and it was Oleg Tinkoff. So I couldn't quite believe it, but presumably speaking to the boss of the team is more important than carrying on talking to me. But what Sean said was they were very happy because they responded. Although it was Etix Quickstep that were making a lot of the riding, they participated. Tinkoff participated as much as they possibly could because they knew there were gains to be had, and they were very happy with the time that they put into Nibali and Quintana. And it was reminiscent, although the territory was completely different and the weather was very different. It's interesting how many of the similar riders were in today's break who were also in the break 2 years ago in the crosswinds at Saint-Amand-Montrond. And Michael Rogers for Tinkoff Saxo was one of the driving forces that day, and he was again one of the driving forces today.
And indeed, 5 years ago en route to La Grande Motte, if I'm not mistaken. Again, very different part of the world, down on the Camargue in the south of France, but similar circumstances, similar time gap actually. The time gap went out very quickly today to around about a minute, and at one stage it looked as though the second group could really lose control of things, but actually they managed to contain their losses quite effectively. You know, at one stage I thought Vincenzo Nibali started to panic. He was isolated. His Dutch lieutenants Luwe Westra and Lars Boom were missing in action today. I think Astana were not particularly
poor. Old Lars Boom's got low cortisol. What the hell do you expect?
They were. I'm not sure if that's been subject to any medical papers, the correlation between low cortisol and ineptitude in crosswinds, but it looked that way today because they had a bit of a shocker, didn't they, those two?
And Nibali had a puncture and was on his own off the back, which was quite a surprise to see.
And was towed back by a team, well, by multiple team cars, also
France especially Trek
and Francois Desjeux, FDJ gave him a good couple of minutes on their back bumper. But anyone who might be worried that any kind of injustice was committed there, they shouldn't, because the Astana direct sportif Alexander Schaefer was fined all of 50 Swiss francs for
how much is that?
It's about probably 30 quid, 40 quid for, let's face it, an infraction that could be the difference between Nibali winning the Tour de France and not winning it.
Although when a rider punctures and it's not, you know, it's at that point of the race, usually a blind eye is turned to that.
Exactly, a blind eye.
And usually teams will assist a rider in that situation.
Yeah, in the same way that in the past 10, 15 years ago, a blind eye might have been turned to a blood transfusion or two.
No, it didn't quite happen in broad daylight in the same way.
You know, I mean,
I don't think you can equate the two, really.
It never really ceases to baffle me.
I remember Cavendish was penalised for that when the tour was in south of England in 2007, his first tour, and he crashed quite close to finish. It often is how the proximity to the finish as well.
And the discretion of the commissaires. I'm sure Lionel's got a view on this.
Well, yeah, I mean, really, two things. One, where were his teammates and why weren't they around him to help him at that key point in the race? He'd already had...
Probably easier to get back on behind a car.
Well, yeah, of course it is, but...
Absolutely, yeah.
Of course, but, you know, yeah. I mean, it's a sort of... That's where the sort of cynical aspect of it comes in, really. You know, were his teammates thinking, well, you know... The instinct is, as soon as you know your team leader is has got a puncture, is to stop and to pace him back on. But maybe they thought, well, we will use the cars. And, in that case, it was pretty blatant. It wasn't one that you could excuse. And the TV director cut away from it pretty promptly once it... Because it went... You know, he was there for a long time, sitting on the bumper.
And in this age of marginal gains, of endless tests to find out what's the best tyre compound, what's the most durable tyre compound, what's the fastest tyre compound, is it not part of the race? Is a puncture not part of the race? An integral part of the race, integral part of the equipment choices that every team makes? And I'm sorry, but if you puncture, I think you should be...
I don't think a puncture is always down to equipment choice.
Not always, but, you know, there are a million imponderables, a million things that happen in a race which are purely down to bad luck, yet you suffer the consequences. Sport is also about luck.
It's an interesting point that, you know, had teammates waited for Nibali, then he wouldn't have been so... It wouldn't have been so easy, perhaps, for them to get the assistance of the cars. And there could be a point where if the gap grows to a certain amount, then they would drop back. But while he's maybe 30, 45 seconds off the back and there's a convoy behind the bunch, you can quite easily bridge back up, can't you? Just one other little thing on the what... things that we heard afterwards. Not everybody, of course, was working in that group, and the gap did go back up to 125 when particularly Ian Stannard and Geraint Thomas started to come through. They hadn't been working, and Cavendish was perhaps urging his countryman Chris Froome, former teammates of course, to contribute a little bit, and I think got a flat refusal, didn't they?
They were mincing, weren't they?
Yeah, I mean, should Sky have done more in that situation? Should they have contributed a bit? I mean, Froome only had two teammates there.
Well, they probably should have done, but again, how many times do we see that? You play that in every given break in any race situation, you play that political game. And if someone ultimately will take up the slack for you, then why would you do the work? And Sky tonight are very happy, quick step on, so who's right?
They weren't hanging around, were they, that group? Well, I spoke to Geraint Thomas at the finish, and he was warming down as he spoke. He had a bloody wound on his elbow, so he had fallen off, but obviously got back up and made that split, and is very well placed overall now as well. You had a little tumble today, did you?
Yeah, someone sort of crashed into my back, over my back wheel, and kind of took me down with him, and Yeah, I was okay, but just had to change my bike and get back. And
you landed on a beach or something, did you?
Oh, it was just after the sprint in Rotterdam.
Yeah.
I was maybe only 30, 40 back, but I was like, ah, it's okay, you know, I'll move up in a bit. Next thing you know, somebody's crashing you, but it's the way it goes.
What happened in the race today? I mean, what can you describe the moment the sort of split happened?
Well, we knew that there was crosswinds after 108, but then we had that downpour with about 100 after 100k, and it was, like I say, it was hard enough to see where you were going, let alone fighting for position and everything. But fortunately, we were all in good position, held it, and it worked out. Couldn't have worked out any better, really.
And when you look around and see such a small group, and you know, Froome's there, Contador was there, but a couple of leaders missed out, it must be a good feeling.
Yeah, definitely. Like, because when it's all splitting, you're not really, there's stuff happening on the radio, but all you're thinking about is staying where you are, and you're concentrating on that. And it's not until about 10k later, when it settles down, you can actually look behind you, and you look behind and there's no one there, and you're like, blimey, that's pretty ideal. And then you hear on the radio the time gaps, and yeah, like I say, it was pretty perfect, really.
So Quintana and Nibali have lost a minute 25. That's got to go down as a very good day for Chris Froome and Team Sky.
Yeah, for sure. Like I say, we were on the ball from the start. Everyone did their job really well. Pete, wow, to Nico early on, and we're all, well, Froome was there and a few of us at the end, so yeah, it was a really successful day.
During the Tour de France, listen twice a day to the Telegraph Cycling Podcast, supported by Jaguar. There is all the latest interviews and analysis from every stage in the evening show. And in the morning, Monday to Friday, Kilometer Zero will take you inside the Tour in the company of the podcast team, Richard Moore, Daniel Fripp, and Lionel Burney.
So, as we discussed, Chris Froome, Alberto Contador, the winners, they'll both be very... they rode very well, didn't they, to make that very small split, 26 riders. Didn't make mistakes that they have made in the past, both of them. But Quintana is the one guy we haven't spoken about. We've spoken about Nibali as well. But Quintana, not too much of a surprise. He's lost another minute 25, 26 today to Froome and Contador. That might not be so much of a problem for him in the mountains, we don't know yet. But Lionel, you spoke to Alex Dowsett. What was the mood around the Movistar team?
Well, I don't think it was doom and gloom. I mean, Dowsett looked pretty disappointed because he had made the split, as we'll hear. He was on Quintana watch. He'd made the split, but the difficulty was finding out where Quintana was. And as Alex explains, getting the information over the radio, with the noise from the wind and the rain, it took him three goes to find out which group Quintana was in, and then eventually dropped back, and then they had quite a long team time trial effort to try and close the gap, and of course brought the group back up to the middle group, but the front guys had already sailed. But whilst disappointing for them, probably not as disappointing as for Nibali, because Nibali had initially made the split and then was caught behind a crash and then conceded ground that he perhaps wouldn't have conceded. Whereas Quintana, if you're to use a golf analogy, Quintana probably rode to par today. He didn't really drop a shot. If you'd said beforehand Quintana's going to lose a minute and a half in crosswinds and rain on the Dutch coast, you wouldn't go, well, that sounds terrible. So, this is Alex Dowsett, and of course a real baptism of fire for him, his first road stage in the Tour de France. Was that a tough first road stage in the Tour de France?
Yeah, it was. It was kind of as I was expecting, just stressful from start to finish. There's no, like in a normal road stage, you'd have at least 40k to sit and chat to your mates and just bowl along, but that was pretty much on it from start to finish. Stressful.
And you had pretty much four seasons in one day, didn't you? Baking hot sunshine this morning, torrential rain at some points, and of course the wind which caused the damage.
Yeah, as expected. But yeah, it caused us more damage than others.
Can you talk me through what kind of happened?
Yes, we knew it was coming, but just staying up the front, super difficult. And then with the rain, like, you can't see anything, you can't hear anything. It's like I was up near the front and
I saw Nairo at one point in a similar position to me, but on the other side of the road, and so I was like, do I try and make it over there, or do I, it's difficult to know what to do. So I sort of just, I stood my ground and I made the front split. But it, I was trying desperately, because I wasn't sure whether Nairo had made it as well. Couldn't see him, but I knew he was kind of up and around there. But yeah, eventually had a good look round, realised that he had missed it, and then I immediately dropped back to the group that he was in to help minimise the time loss.
So this notion that you guys all know where your teammates are because the director sportif's telling you on the radio, that's nonsense on a day like today, is it?
It's more difficult for me. I mean, the radios are hard to understand at the best of times, harder to understand when English isn't your first name. I mean, I understand a lot of Spanish, and probably if they said what they said to me face to face, I'd get it. But it's difficult over the radio, so I had to ask him like three times loud and clear which group Nairo was in before I dropped back, just in case he was in the front group.
And then it was almost like a team time trial effort for a while.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of guys in our group who were who were in a similar position to us. You know, we had Nibali there, and I think Pino must have been there because FDJ was working, and Garmin Cannondale. So there's a lot of guys working.
Hard work.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of looked at Ari, our director, today, and he just went, it's the tour. Yeah, it's...
And I guess it doesn't get a lot easier with basically two more classics-type stages coming.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Basically. There's not a lot I can add to that.
Well, I'll let you carry on with the recovery meal.
Thanks,
Alex. Cheers.
Follow us on Twitter @cycling_podcast or on our website, thecyclingpodcast.com.
Okay, so we heard there from Alex Dowsett. Yeah, interesting role he's got at Movistar. Daniel, anything more to add on the Spanish team?
Well, we've talked a lot in the last few months and weeks about the various strengths and weaknesses of the main contenders, Los Cuatro Galácticos, Fantastic Four, the Fab Four. One thing that hasn't really been talked about is the issue of communication and how Movistar are actually very different in this respect from the other teams. Also, Sky, to a certain extent, haven't had a block of riders that have ridden together all year or trained together all year, but certainly to a greater extent than Movistar. Quintana doesn't have this sort of posse of loyal lieutenants that goes everywhere with him and trains with him and has been at altitude with him. And the manager of Movistar, Eusebio Unzué, has a very novel tactic when it comes to picking his teams. And we saw that to a certain extent with the way Dowsett was selected for the tour. Movistar released a long list of, I think, 13 riders, or it might have been 11 riders. Alex Dowsett didn't even feature on that list, so seemed to have been excluded from selection, then was picked. I also know that winner Anacona, the Colombian domestique at Movistar, was told, he was convinced that he wasn't going to ride the tour, and he was told on Monday, last Monday, that he was going to ride. He was completely taken by surprise. And Unzué's belief about his domestiques and about his leaders' domestiques is that they should always be around about 90% fit, and he should be able to call on them at any time. And they don't really work to form peaks in the season. They always have to be ready. And, you know, it's a bit more of a movable feast, the way he builds a Grand Tour team. And when it comes to stages like today, when communication is imperative, I'm not sure Alex Dowsett's Spanish is tip-top. Perhaps that is a factor.
Unzué is a sort of old-school director, isn't he? I mean, he's run teams since the 80s. They were Banesto, before that were Reynolds, they were Kees de Parn. They've been various guises over the years, with various leaders, from Pedro Delgado all the way through to Miguel Indurain, Alejandro Valverde. So he's been around the block, hasn't he?
I also know another team who has employed, or which has employed this method. Giant Alpecin have tried a similar thing with Warren Barguil, the French rider who rode extremely well today to be in the front group. It was a bit of a surprise to see him there. They didn't want to put too much pressure on him and put him in the Tour de France last year. And his race programme last year was very much along the same lines of not telling him too far in advance which races he was doing, so as not to, you know, get him too nervous before he did race.
He did ride very well today. TJ Van Garderen as well was in that front group, and it was a bit of a surprise maybe to see BMC really piling on the pressure. They were doing a lot of work. They had a few bodies up there, Daniel Oss, Greg Van Avermaet as well. There was absolutely no pretense that they were going to defend Rohan Dennis's yellow jersey. I wonder if Dennis will have been, when he sees the footage of that, will be. I wonder how he'll feel about that.
Well, and we mentioned the big four, but really the leader of the virtual general classification, the virtual Maillot Jaune, is TJ Van Garderen. He's the best placed general classification rider. But this was always going to be BMC's week, really. When you look at the team selection, their team is very much more weighted towards these first few stages than, for instance, Team Sky, isn't it? So they have to cash in, I think, this week.
So, listen, we'll wrap things up there. We've got tomorrow morning, Monday morning, launching our new morning podcast, Kilometre Zero, and that will be Monday to Friday, a short show, short and sharp, and it'll be slightly more featurey. We'll begin with a sort of a little story of the journey to get here, meeting up with some of our colleagues in the press room over the last few days. It'll continue with a tour of the Village Départ, a feature on mechanics, on domestiques. We've got various aspects of the tour which maybe don't fit into the regular podcast to bring you in Kilometre Zero over the 3 weeks. So there'll be 15 shows in total. And let us know if you have any ideas for Kilometre Zero as well, and give us your feedback on it. Lionel, why are you shaking your head at that? We've got lots of ideas, haven't we?
Well, we have got lots of ideas, but, you know, it's a bit late in the day to have okay. Our agenda.
Don't give us ideas. But we want to basically be little items that don't fit in the regular show, which we're trying to keep as tight as possible because there's so much to talk about on the race, isn't there, and interviews to play. Anyway, let's leave it there, and we'll be back tomorrow. We'll be in Belgium tomorrow, very interesting looking stage tomorrow, heading towards France now, but yeah, thank you very much, Daniel.
Thank you
Lionel.
See you on the Murder Hui.
For the best analysis, discussions and interviews from the 2015 Tour de France, listen to the Telegraph Cycling Podcast, supported by Jaguar.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right here,
right now. AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.